Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Boy, do we have an evening of conversation for you tonight. I have one of my favorite persons in the world here with me. And we have already been starting to talk off the air, but before I let that person on air, I have to do a little housekeeping. You know, I usually do. So let me get everything straight. First, you're listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. You're on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And if you want to call in and hear some and hear what we're doing and ask a question or say hello, you dial 516-453-6063 and you press the number 1. Now, that Blog Talk Radio address that I gave you, SFTH2, allows you to have access to about 30 of the episodes that we've done now since March, and it's been just talking to people who I think are absolutely fabulous and brilliant, and how the arts have really affected their lives. And this evening, I have one of my favorite persons in the world, like I said, and I'm going to let you just listen a little bit to just sit back and relax to some of his most beautiful work that he's done, and then we'll talk to him.
Each sensation, darkness, death, and waiting imagination. Silently the senses abandon their
Ladies and gentlemen, that's just a teaser. I'm going to play some more later on during the show, but I would like to introduce my friend. Mr. Davis Gaines has performed the title role of the Phantom of the Opera for over 2,000 times. And I'm going to ask him since then how many times he has sung it at so many really wonderful venues. He has, believe it or not, done some of my most favorite roles. He's been Don Quixote. He's been King Arthur in Camelot. He has been Joe Hardy in the Damn Yankees. And wouldn't it have been fun for me for him to have been there when I played Lola? He's been on television. He has performed with every major orchestra, probably in the world, but we'll say in the United States, but I think it's all over the world. He has done television and film. And with that if I go on, we won't have enough time to talk to him on this program. So I am going to introduce my lovely friend, Mr. Davis Gaines. Hello, Davis.
Hello, my sweet Winnie. How are you?
I'm fine. I am so glad that you are here.
It's so good to hear your voice. Was that you singing Fever at the beginning of your show?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. Yes, I thought that was great. Sounds awesome.
Thank you. I don't know.
When was the last time we talked? I can't even remember. It's just been, the last 18 months have been crazy.
Yes, it's a little bit before that, but I think it was like around New Year's Eve a couple of years ago.
Yeah, when
we talked, you know, just to wish each other Happy New Year. And then it's been just, like you say, absolutely crazy trying to adjust to what our lives have become. And that, you know, I mean, here I am doing this, and this was not even a twinkle in my eye a couple of years ago.
Right.
Something like
that. Yeah. But, it's so good that you're doing it, doing something like, you know, I haven't done anything, so I'm glad you're doing something. It's awesome.
Yes, you have. No, but, you know, the thing about it is that what I'm trying to do is try to figure out where we're morphing in this business as to, you know, where are we going? Those of us who've been in the business for a while, the business changes, and there's nothing like reinvention. So how do we reinvent ourselves? Like, you know, I mean, you're doing Fagin and Oliver, which I remember.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it's one of my favorite.
That was amazing for me too, because that was my first Broadway show I ever saw was Oliver when I was like 10 years old, and that's really kind of what got me in this trajectory toward being an actor. And I just wanted to be one of those little boys up there on that stage on Broadway, and I just had this fantasy that like a half hour when we were sitting in our seats, the stage manager would come on the speaker and say, one of our boys is sick. Is there anyone in the audience that could come back and be in the show? And I saw boys just like me doing what I always dreamed about doing. And then to be able to play Fagin a few years ago, it was like full circle. And it brought back so many memories. And I've always loved this score, and I think I originally saw Georgia Brown do Nancy, and then later on I did a dinner theater production of it. I actually was in the ensemble of it out in Long Island, and Shani Wallace, who played Nancy in the movie, was in our show at this dinner theater, and so I got to hear Shani Wallace sing As Long As He Needs Me Every Night, which was amazing. And Seth Rudetsky, who has a huge following and shows like you do in radio and Sirius XM. Seth was in the chorus with me back in the day when he was a little kid. Oliver means a lot to me.
Well, I was going to ask you, what was it that prompted you to really go into the theater? And before I could ask that question, boom, 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 you right out of the gate. You know? There you are. That's how
took
I
it right out of your mouth. I know.
Yes.
We finished each other's sentences. It's like that's how it is. We know each other so well.
But when you were younger, was there anybody that you listened to that you liked to hear, you know, because your voice is...
Well, as a kid, I was a kind of a shy kid, and I loved my records and record player, and I would, you know, sit in my room and listen to records of singers and I guess Broadway, you know, cast recordings, and I just always wanted to be an actor since I can early remember, and joined a children's theater group in Orlando when I was a little kid, and then I had a great junior high school drama teacher, Ann Derflinger, who, you know, saw something in me and took me under her wing. And then I went to Florida State University, majored in theater, and then came to New York right after that. So I just always wanted to do it. There was no time when I wasn't an actor, I would probably be an architect because I love architecture and art. I double majored in art history and theater, and so I like that, but I just never really wanted to do anything else. And my mom is listening today, and she can tell you that.
I'm
tell you
doing ask about your family. Yes. Now tell me, how's everybody?
I talked to mom today, and she says hi to you, and I hope she's listening now, Stella. We love my Stella, and she's great.
Hello,
and
my sister. Yes. Yes. You know,
she's doing great.
Good, good. I mean, I know that you have just such a wonderful, supportive family, and I've been privileged to know them. Your siblings, wonderful.
Yep, my sisters. Yep, Patty, Pam. Yep.
Yes. And, you know, always very, very, very supportive of you and from the very beginning. And I think that we met really at the beginning when you were just coming into New York City, you know, and you were really
Well, I think I'd been there, I don't know when we what years we actually met, but I think I'd already done by that time the Camelot with Richard Burton and Whorehouse with Alexis Smith, like out and I might have already done Hello Dolly with Carol Channing by then. I'm not sure, but
I don't know if you've done it then. You know, I think you did it a little bit.
Tell everybody how we met. You tell everybody how kind of we met.
We did industrials and.
And tell everybody what an industrial show is. Like, what was that?
Well,
they don't have them anymore.
You know, don't they? They don't do them anymore, do they?
I don't think they do. Mm-mm. Well, it was a great training ground. I mean, I learned a lot. It made me grow as a.
Yeah, we did everything from you. Remember, we did Footloose.
I do. We were like triple threats. Like we were singing and dancing and the scripts.
It was amazing.
It was intense.
Armstrong Floors and Fred Stoner was our producer, and I still send him Christmas cards every year, you know.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, he's so sweet. And it was just an industrial production specialized. They took musicals and specifically
changed the lyrics.
Changed the lyrics. To emphasize their products. So we did Footloose, but we talked about Armstrong Floors with it.
There was a script too. Like wasn't there an arc? There was a story. It was like almost a whole musical with characters and stuff.
We rehearsed it like a production. And so I think we did, I don't know how many times we did it. We did a lot of them though. And they would take us all over the place. You know, I mean,
it was wonderful.
Yes, and it was.
And I remember. I guess you're right. I remember, like one time, one of those things. After the show, I remember feeling like that was a turning point for me. That like, wait a minute, I can play in the big pool. I felt, I gave that whatever we did gave me so much confidence in myself as an actor, as a comedian. Yeah. I was getting great laughs, and I just remember going outside by a lake and saying, you know what? I think now I can play with the big boys now. So it was a really great turning point for me. Yeah.
It was so many. First of all, for me, a woman of color, John Montgomery was one of the directors of it.
Yeah.
And John would let me do any role I wanted to do.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know,
he loved, I think we were his two favorites.
He kept on hiring us again and again and again. Uh-huh, and we would do all these things. I mean, I remember doing the Pirate Queen, and I thought, oh my God.
I remember that.
You know, but the.
Gosh, I wonder if there's any footage of that anywhere. I wonder if they kept any kind of footage of that. That would be maybe ask
that. The only thing I have is a photograph of us doing it. When we all sat down together, and I think I sent that to you not too long ago.
Yes, but maybe Fred has maybe there's an archival something that we
I'll ask him this year because holidays coming in, you know.
But here's a question I want to ask you about during that period. It makes me laugh when I think about it. But there was a reason why you didn't want to get in my car and drive with me. Was I not a good driver or something?
Let me just say. You know, I was going to bring that up. Now, you know, Davis, of course, he just was. We just bonded immediately. But Davis, he is a driving person. Who I said, Davis, you're not doing your signal. At that point, I didn't drive, so Davis would always take me everywhere. And you know, I used to love to shop.
David, oh, Lord. She still does. David, yeah.
Davis would go. He's changing the lanes. And I'm like, Davis, you're not signaling. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I said, Davis, I'm not getting in the car with you anymore.
You did. You were scared. I don't know. But we always ended up carpooling for some reason. But it's always the joke between us. And
yes,
you know, that's one of my pet peeves, though. That is, to this day, I'm sorry I didn't signal back then, but I thought I did. But I'm a good driver. But
I don't know what you would do. Well,
one of my pet peeves is not the people that don't signal and doesn't change when they change lanes or don't put their blinker on. That bugs the crap on me. Yeah.
Yes. Well, there you go. I don't know what.
Maybe you taught me that. I don't know.
Well, I tell you that was the only thing that we would do just about everything together. But gee whiz, almighty, I get in the car with you, and I just would do a lecture and say, all right now, David.
Yeah, you're like a backseat driver in the front seat. That's what you were.
Yes, yep. Exactly. I do want to talk. There's so much that we talked before the show started. We talked about. I said I want to ask you questions, and you said you know everything about. I said no, but there's so many things that I don't know about you. I want to talk to me about what was the reason for you to start the scholarship. You know, I want people to know. Yes, I want to talk about that. I really do.
I'm very proud of that. I mean, it's at Florida State, it's called the Davis Gaines Endowed Scholarship in Music Theater. And when I went there, there was no musical theater department. There was just you majored in theater, or there wasn't a musical theater degree. But over the years, they added one, and is now FSU is in the top 25 drama schools in the United States. And it's a great, great training ground. So I used to go back, I guess. I don't know if it was during Phantom or after Phantom or before, I don't know, but I started going back every year to do like a benefit concert, and we would raise money for the School of Theater. And and then along the way, one of the deans of the theater said, why don't we put this in a scholarship fund? And I said, that sounds great. So I wouldn't, for years, 10 years, I would go back every year and do and usually around the holidays. And then it started, I would go back and we would do concert versions of musicals with the students. And so I would play role. We would like Music Man or Fantastics or whatever. I would go back and be in the show with like a really fast rehearsal period, 3 days or something. And then we just mount it with the orchestra from the School of Music. And so I got to see these kids for all 4 years of their growth, and I got to know them and mentor them, and to see their how they grew and how they moved on to New York, and how a lot of them are on Broadway now, and it was very rewarding. So the scholarship kept building and growing, and back I would say the year 2000. George H.W. Bush invited me to sing at Barbara Bush's surprise birthday party in Kennebunkport, at their home in Kennebunkport, Maine. So of course I said yes, and it was an amazing experience. I have tons of stories about that, but he sent me a check, which I never cashed. I have it here somewhere, for $5,000, and I wrote him. I said, I don't want any money. It was an honor for me to do that. And if you want to give any money, just if you want to do this, send that $5,000 to Florida State and put it in my scholarship. And he did. And at that point, if you get to a certain level, I would just maybe $100,000. And if you get to a level of the scholarship, then the state of Florida matched that amount. So his $5,000, George Bush's, put it over the edge to be endowed, and that's what they call it, endowment. So the state of Florida matched those funds, and so now it's grown to in perpetuity, which is great. And then it involves him and Florida State, and how he was so nice to me. Yeah.
I remember you telling me you went. I remember you but now tell me what if a student gets a scholarship, what does it afford the student to get? What
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't have any say on who gets it. I'm not out of the loop on that, but the teachers there decide who is the most in need of it and the most deserving of it. And so they divvy out it every quarter or semester, whatever they're on. And so they get money to, you know, pay for their housing or pay for their supplies and their books or you know, they get money that, and I get, it's so nice. And every year I get, well, a couple times a year, I get letters from the students that get the scholarship and I save them all. And they're just, they tell their stories and why they got into theater and how much this helped them and how much it meant, you know, the money meant for them. And so that, you know, it keeps growing every year. The money in the bank can, you know, keeps growing interest. And so I don't think it's ever going to go away. So, so if anybody out there wants to like give a donation, and make sure if you do send it to, make sure they know that it goes to the Davis Gaines Endowed Scholarship in Music Theater. Make sure that happens. But if you want to, and it's tax deductible, and it's a nice thing to do. But yeah.
Well, you know, now that's one of the things that I think that I'm, besides the fact that I'm proud of you anyway, because I am, but that I'm so proud of you that you created that and that it has really continued and has longevity all this time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I want to ask you something. Of course, you know, I want to play a little bit more of the song, but then I have to start from the very beginning. And that is a 1 minute introduction. I want to tell you that I sit and listen to you and listen to you do that. And it's just magnificent. How, I know that you've done it over 2000 times in production, but how many times do you think, can you estimate that you sung that song?
I don't know. I mean, I probably 2,000 more
really,
times.
Because, I mean, in doing this, I've heard you sing it about 20 different places, you know, over the years.
And
you know.
You can go on YouTube and find it. I have a YouTube channel that I've been during the pandemic kind of uploading all of my recordings of, you know, I've done like 30 something compilation albums, but I put all of my stuff on my YouTube channel, and I'm gradually putting old videos on there as well. And I keep finding these old, like you mentioned earlier, who was one of my idols or whatever in theater was John Raitt. Cause he, you know, he sang like in my voice and I sang like he's, you know, it was same range and same kind of roles. And that he, you know, he played Billy Bigelow originally in Carousel at the Majestic Theater where Phantom played. So I played on the same stage that John Raitt had played on. But when I was doing Phantom out here in Los Angeles, he was, I think, maybe in his 80s. And we ended up doing concerts together. And so here I was singing with this guy that I've idolized all my life. And it was amazing. He would, like, I would sing Music of the Night during it. And he would sing the Soliloquy from Carousel. And then we would sing duets like If I Loved You and Hey There from Pajama Game. And it was like, and I have footage of that I just found of us in rehearsal and us in performance that I'm going to put on my YouTube channel at some point.
Fabulous.
And, yeah.
Now I just can't imagine, you know, between that and the national anthem, you sing that. Yes, that's another thing. I mean, I would go with you
last
to
week.
Parks, you know, remember? And I'd sit there and there you would be singing the national anthem every time some season opened up for some sport.
It's always fun. And I, in fact, you know, I haven't really haven't had a job since February of 2020, but the only thing that I've done in the last 18 months, I've sang a national anthem and two Dodger national anthems, that was just the last 2 weeks. But the anthem has got me out of the house. Just sing it. I didn't know if my voice would, if my voice would still be there. I think it's still there.
Yeah. You know what? Now we were talking about earlier, but you know, I just had a thought. We were talking about Damn Yankees, and you did Joe Hardy, and I did Lola. Mm. And now, what did you say? Terribly of you. Yes, we.
Now we have to play old Joe people. And Meg. Yeah.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be fun?
But that's another turning point.
We could do it in concert, though. We could do it in concert.
We could, yeah.
Hesitation. Yes, we could. We would be
okay,
fun.
Okay, yeah. On the radio, yeah, so no one could see us. Yeah.
Yes.
But Damn Yankees was another amazing turning point in my career, actually. And I got to do it. I had worked at Paper Mill Playhouse a couple of times before. I did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat and a farce, a Ray Cooney play with Tony Randall and Millicent Martin and Paxton Whitehead. And so I had done a play and a musical at Paper Mill, and there was a producer, Angelo Del Rossi, there. And he called and said that they were doing Damn Yankees, and they would like me to come in and audition. And that George Abbott, who was was the 99 at the time. He wrote Damn Yankees. He directed it on Broadway. He did the movie, and so I walked into the Minskoff rehearsal studio, that big room, and they were sitting at the end of the table, Angelo and Mr. Abbott, and I went up to Mr. Abbott and said, "What an honor it is to meet you," and shook his hand, and he looked at me and said, "Well, you look like a baseball player." And I said, "Well, thanks. What would you like me to sing?" And he goes, can you swing a bat?" And I said, "Yeah, of course I can. Of course I can. And he goes, "Well, the guy we got for the movie, I forget his name." And I said, Tab Hunter. And he goes,
"Yes."
He goes, "Yeah. Well, he couldn't swing a bat." I said, "Oh, but I can. What would you like me to sing?" And he looked at me, Angelo, and he said, "If Angelo says you can sing, that's good enough for me. I'll see you first day of rehearsal." So I got that job without even opening my mouth in front of Mr. Abbott. And it was an amazing experience to have him at 99 years old direct the show. And, and Orson Bean was the devil, and Allison Reed was Lola. And we thought it was going to go to Broadway.
Say it again. Who was Lola? Sorry.
Allison Reed. She played I think she played Cassie in the movie Chorus Line, actually.
Yes.
But so we thought we were going to Broadway because it's Mr. Abbott, and it was a really good production, but it didn't go. But right after that, of course, he turned to 100 years old. So who was in charge of all his birthday celebrations and concerts and stuff was Hal Prince, because Mr. Abbott was Hal Prince's mentor. And they worked in the same office after, you know, when Hal came to New York as a soldier. And so after the war. And so from just that meeting with George Abbott and then meeting Hal Prince, that's why I got to know Hal Prince during those 100th birthday celebrations. And that's how I got Phantom and how I got Raoul on Broadway and then Phantom because of Hal. And then Hal put me in Whistle Down the Wind, which I thought was going to Broadway too, but it didn't go. But so it goes all the way back to Mr. Abbott that I got to Hal Prince. It's crazy how that happened.
It is. It is. You know, our production of Damn Yankees was at Hartford Stage, and I had David Rounds as the Jazz Devil and Michael Rupert as Joe, and we thought we were going to Broadway.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
How many times have we both thought we're going to go in and we don't go?
And it doesn't come, but then something else comes and it takes you there. You know, it takes you another room.
Yeah,
takes you.
Yeah. I remember I was doing one show that was called Roboni, and we were rehearsing downtown at like 8:90, and we closed in rehearsal. We never even made it. It was so bad.
About shows that were out of town, and I have to tell you, I'm the artistic director of a group called Essence of Acting, and my wonderful actors, I have their 15, and one of them, they have a dual role. One is our secretary, recording secretary, and her name is Julia Luma. And Julia Luma told me to tell you hello, because she did to Stormy Weather, Imagining Lena Horne, and she played, and you did it with Leslie Uggams, and she played she played the mother. And so she told me
she's amazing. That was a really good production, and that was also supposed to go to Broadway, too.
Yeah, that was in Philly, yes, and that was supposed to go, yep.
But I played, Lena Horne was, married to the Lenny, I think it's Lenny's name, but I played Leslie Uggams or Lena Horne's husband, but it was all in flashbacks, so it was always, I was always younger than Leslie,
But
and of course to work with Leslie Uggams, like I watched, you know, I grew up, you know, this is probably dating me, but I mean, do you remember like on Mitch Miller and she was on TV singing all those songs, you know, and then here I was, you know, kissing her on stage. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, there you
it's
go.
Crazy.
You know, I mean, but it's just one of those things where, you know, you realize that sometimes. Lenny Hayden. That was his name. Lenny Hayden.
Yeah, Lenny Hayden.
Husband. But you, it's so interesting how things just turn a corner for you. I remember the first Broadway show that I ever saw was James Earl Jones in Great White Hope. And ultimately, being, you know, out in L.A. and going to all these festivities, I go to the Emmys, we go to the Governor's Ball, and who do I sit next to?
Isn't that crazy?
And and he's so gracious. And I like your work. I'm like, you like my work? Let me just tell you how I know you. And so it's just one of those things where the business makes it possible. I don't know if there's any other business that makes it more possible for you to really run into and work with people who you idolized as when you were your younger self. When you were your younger self, you know. So
totally, it's amazing how that happens. And it's a small community for sure, but it's just people that you looked up to. And I got called a year or so ago to the Geffen Theater. It's a great theater company here in LA, and they give out this big honors awards every year then to raise money. They have a big fundraiser, and I got a call from them. Asking if I would sing a song before Barbara Streisand comes on stage to give Quincy Jones his award. I was like, are you kidding me? Of course. Sign me up. So here I was. I didn't know how to run down. I don't remember. It was, you know, Dave Chappelle was on it, Sarah Silverman, and me singing, you know, This Is the Moment, and then Barbara Streisand, and then and Quincy Jones, and Mel Brooks, and it just was.
It's
a pinch yourself.
You do, especially in Hollywood. It really can happen so quickly in Hollywood. I mean, I remember, you know, working with Norman Lear, and I mean, being.
Of course.
You know, I mean, he would take me to these festivities. He and Lynn, and here would come Barry Gordy, and he lived down the street from all these people. Come over to the table, and Norman would say, well, now, because I'd say, oh, I saw this one over here, and Sherry Belafonte, because Sherry and I are friends. Actually, Sherry, he said, they'll come over here in a minute, because he never gets up. Norman never gets up. He just sits. And he said, now, you know,
I thought of you recently, you know, like in the last couple of years when they've been doing the remakes of the On the Family, and he's been on a lot of interviews, and I thought of you immediately because I knew that you knew.
At 100, almost 100 years old, he's just fabulous. But he would take me everywhere. He'd say, okay, you know, one of the producers would go with me and escort me, because Carl, who says hello to you, by the way, and who says,
oh, give my love.
You know, Tennessee Waltz is still his favorite song for you. He loved your interpretation of it. But because he wasn't there, I'd go with one of the. He'd take me everywhere, and he would say to me, we would go see Maya Angelou, because Maya was the godmother of his two youngest children. And, you know, and he said, well, we'd get in the theater, and I'd say, oh, well, everybody's looking, you know, do we got to get up and say hello? He says, nope, sit down. They'll come over. And they always did. amazing. He was, he's a brilliant man.
Still is. Brilliant.
Yes, still is. Brilliant man. Brilliant man. Well, now, see, this is what I thought was going to happen, because now I have to say it. We're entering into the last 20 minutes of the show, because, and I have to say, now, if anyone has any questions, that they should press the number one and, let us know if you want to say hello or something like that. But until I see the number one, I'm not letting anybody in. So
what's your number again? What's that telephone number?
Okay. The number is, thank you very much, David. It's 516-453-6063.
Do that again.
516-453-6063. So that if people, when they dial that and then they press the number one, and then I can let them in. But now I'm going to ask you some things. Now, these are a couple of things that I don't know. So you've had an amazing career. It's been absolutely fabulous. So let me ask you, what, if you had to recall in memory, what was one of your best memories in your career?
Well, I mean, I guess my dream is always to have, performed on Broadway. And my first Broadway thing was, I was in the ensemble of Camelot with Richard Burton, and that was pretty cool and got to know him. But it was like, and then just, and every time, I mean, Broadway's not, I've done probably some of my best work around the country in, regional theaters and not on Broadway, but it's, that somehow is like the place that's so magical. And it was like, as a kid, that's what you wanted to do. And it came true. So I guess that's pretty, and it opened so many doors, and Phantom, of course, opened so many doors. And, to sing, to sing for Hal Prince's at the Kennedy Center Honors and sing, live. That was pretty amazing with, Chita Rivera and me and whatever other show he was doing at the time, Kiss of a Spider Woman, I think. So, just got to know so many people and work with so many people and learn from them, learn from Carol Channing, learn from Richard Burton, learn from all the directors I've worked from Mr. Abbott, Hal Prince, Tommy Toon, and just everybody that I'd been able to work with and learn from and watch as a, you stand in the wings and watch how they do it. And you just take it all in. So I've been so lucky that way. I've had so many great experiences.
I do agree with you that Broadway is the magical place, because young people come up to me and they'll say, I want to be a Broadway performer. But what I've learned in my life is that some of the best work that I've done has been away from Broadway.
It's true. It's true. It is true. And it's not, people sometimes think that, people in New York sometimes think that's like the center of the universe, but really, I've seen, amazing things. I've seen not so good stuff on Broadway. So,
Because someone says they're not, it doesn't mean that they're brilliant. It just means that they are in New York.
And you can still be a brilliant actor and not ever set foot on Broadway stage.
And that's the thing that I tell young people. I said, Lloyd Richards used to say, if you realize that there is theater outside of New York City, you will work your entire life.
Yes, your whole life. Yes, you're
your
right.
Whole life.
And when I talk to kids, like younger kids, then their first question is that we want to be famous. I said, no, that's not the reason to be an actor. That's not the reason to go in this business. And then they go, how much money do you make? So that's another thing that you should not go in this business for, because actors are, they don't make a lot of money. So, and it's not about being famous. So, that's what the younger kids think that. It's like, no, it's not about the end goal. It's not about, it's just about doing the work and, and studying and learning your craft and just, being as best an actor as you can. So, and if you are, then you work forever.
Yeah, you will. And eventually, you know, in your life, if it's to happen, then Broadway will happen for you. But to mm-hmm. say that I want to be a Broadway performer, or I want to do a Broadway play, I said it doesn't yeah. start on Broadway. So many people
exactly.
come to Broadway who have never done anything in theater before. And you want to go,
exactly.
Okay. You know, I mean, and they don't do it well because they don't have the discipline. They don't understand that it does take a lot of preparation to get there
yes.
and sustain yeah. yourself there, you know. And, you know, mm-hmm. and the theater now is very, very different. There are a lot of,
totally.
You know, there are a lot of things that are on Broadway now that I don't know if I would categorize them as theater, but they are,
mm-hmm.
they are there, you know.
I agree.
And the discipline to get them on is different. You know, I remember...
And to do 8 shows a week. I mean, it's like...
8 shows a week. You know, I remember yep. Carol Channing, I was looking at a documentary and she was talking about walking past the theater and it was some show that was out and half of the cast was outside. You know, she was...
I saw that. That's in her documentary. Yeah, and it was in Schubert Alley.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was in Schubert Alley.
Well, you know, we're not on. Well, but you're in the show, aren't you? Are
yep.
you in the show?
Yep.
You know, so you're out here where you're just waiting for your cue. What is, you know, I mean, it's a different school of thought. Let's put it
really,
like that.
And yeah. You know, and I would never think, I mean, I would never ever think of calling in sick ever. Like,
no,
I mean, I would
no.
go on, you know, on my last leg.
Exactly.
Know, to, you
I
know,
mean, you know,
and now
people get it. They get a hangnail and, you know, I can't make it. Or, you know, and I listen to this and I kind of go, okay, well, all right. If
things
that's
have changed.
What theater is,
yeah.
Yes, it has. You know, we sound older like we
do. We do sound old, don't we?
Yes.
But we're not.
You know,
we're not.
But we're not. No, we're not. And that's why I said we could do Damn Yankees. Don't spew me. I'm telling you.
Okay.
That can happen.
Well, put it together. I'm in. Yeah.
Oh, well,
I'm in.
All right. Now there are people who are listening who will say, oh, you two do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, maybe.
Well, we
yeah,
can
maybe.
Play all the parts, actually. If it's a radio show, we can play all the parts.
But the thing is that, you know, to encourage people to love the basics of theater, not just the visible things, I said to them, I said, you know, what's interesting is that the show that I did, off Broadway for no money at all, $25 mm-hmm. for transportation. I get paid really a lot of money to do on Broadway, and I didn't change anything.
Right.
You know,
it's,
so
that's
you
right.
take Broadway with you everywhere. Every time you hit the stage, it's Broadway. You
mm-hmm.
know, that
mm-hmm.
I think is the bar. If that's the high bar, then I'm on it. Every time I hit the stage, I'm on Broadway, you know, because
I don't have a Broadway
performance. I don't have an off-Broadway performance. I have a performance. And,
there
you
know,
you go. Those things, you know, I just, it's an amazing kind of thing. All right. So I still have a lot of things to ask you about. So wait a minute. I mean, okay. Wait.
Okay.
So, all right. I asked you about the most amazing thing. What was the least amazing thing in your career?
Oh gosh. Well, you know, of course, being out of work, you know, it's nothing's ever certain. Like there's, you know, you go periods of and with no work at all for a long time, and you
yes.
think you'll never get a job again, and then the phone rings the next day. But it's like it's just the uncertainty of it. It's not fun. I guess probably the ups and downs of it. So I guess that's probably it.
That's it.
I try not to read reviews, but that affects me. Yeah.
I'm
just
too
one person's opinion.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I'm too very sensitive. So, you know, I mean, either it works for me or it works against me. So if they say I'm absolutely brilliant, then I have to believe that. So if they say I'm terrible, then I have to believe that too. So I said, okay, I don't want to.
Yeah, but also you can get it in your head, like if they even like something and they say, oh, I love this part when he did this. And then, of course, you go, oh, I can do that better. And then it becomes,
yeah, and then
blow it out of proportion.
Exactly.
And it's
not
good anymore. It's not good anymore.
No, it's not. And it's not spontaneous. And one of the things, and that's the reason why I don't look, when I do film, I don't look at dailies. You know, I'll take the notes from the director, but I don't look at dailies because then I become too self conscious about which way I should be looking, which angle is best for me, which side of my face.
I can't watch
is the best.
Myself. Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. no. Mm-hmm. I can barely listen to myself, because that's why you don't hear too much of Fever on here, because I can just about take it, and then then I gotta go. I gotta, you know. I think the disappointment of thinking that something that you had a great investment in, like as a performer, for me, there were several shows that I thought, you know, I did a wonderful show very early in my career called Ragtime Blues, where I played Belle to the music of, oh, okay, so now I'm going to forget the ragtime artist who I'll think of him in a second. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's going to go to Broadway. I mean, and I get a call and, you know, out of town and, you know, and of course, you know, we think, well, this is going to go. And it was very disappointing. It was very disappointing, because that was one that I really, Scott Joplin.
Yeah, you're proud of your work. Scott Joplin. And you invest
and
so much. And you think, I'm doing, you're proud of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and all the elements are there. All the talent is there. I mean, we had brilliant performers. Ken Page was in that one. Helen Geller.
I listened to your interview with Ken Page the other day. It's great.
Wasn't he fabulous? Ken, and you know what? That's when I met Ken, and I thought I knew things about him. I learned, like I'm learning from you, things that I had, you know people for decades, but you don't know a whole lot about them. Just my brother, man. I just love him so much.
He's awesome. I did the Muni several summers ago, and he was, of course, he's there. And I saw him a lot. He's awesome. Yep.
Just fabulous.
I didn't realize he grew up with the Muni. I didn't, all the whole story of him being there.
Yep.
It's crazy.
How many times
I actually saw Ain't Misbehaving on Broadway. It's like looking up to all those five people, I knew the cast recording backwards, forwards and backwards,
It's crazy. Yeah, and of course we lost my dear friend Amelia.
I know, Amelia.
Yeah.
I know,
I
sweet
love
lady.
My heart. Yes, but those disappointments, and I think a big disappointment for me is that there's so many people like Amelia, like Gregory Hines, and I won't get a chance to grow old with, to sit down and really laugh and cry about all of the things that we all laugh and cry about now together, those memories. I think that's the saddest part of my life. But now since we have less than 10 minutes left, here we go. I have one more question that I can ask.
Okay.
I really want to play my song again because I just love it. What do you want
to
do?
Music of the Night song?
Yes, of course. Of course. You know I love Music of the Night.
Yeah, we'll start it later because that violin plays for a long time.
I know, but I can't start it later. You know what?
You
don't start telling me. No, I can't because this is, it's on radio and I have to start it when they tell me to start it, and they start it at zero.
Lord.
I can start it while we're talking.
Yeah.
Yes, I can. Oh, I'm going to do it. Would you stop bossing me around? This is the reason why.
Okay.
You see? This is the reason why I beat you up. Because you always have to start bossing me around.
I don't boss you around. No, I can't boss Lenny Godfrey around. That's impossible.
But, okay. So, all right. I'm going to start it and start it very softly while you tell me what it is that you want to do now. What do you want to do now?
Of course, I still want to work. And, of course, a Broadway show came up, I'd go to New York in a second. I love living in Los Angeles. I love, of course, who wouldn't? The weather's gorgeous. I'm looking at the blue skies right now. And I'm kind of spoiled living out here. But I've done a lot. The positive about that is I've got to do tons of roles that I hadn't played before. and they have some great theater out here. And so I've got to do roles that, like Music Man, like Fagin, like Man of La Mancha, like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, like just things. And I did Silence the Musical. I played Hannibal Lecter, and it was amazingly funny spoof of Silence of the Lambs. And I've got to my chops. I keep my chops up.
Yes,
and,
you keep your chops up.
And doing new roles. And and of course my favorite one, you know, is Don Quixote. And I say all the time my dream is to do that on Broadway at some point. And I'm working on that, trying to get the rights and trying to make that happen. But manifest it. So yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah. I'm going to my hometown of Orlando, Florida in February for the month to do a production of The Fantastics. I'm going to play El Gallo, and it's like another full circle moment, because I right out of college I played Matt in The Boy, and so now I'm playing El Gallo. So I get to be home with my family and my hometown friends, and the great theater company I've done. It's the Orlando Shakespeare Theater. I've done Les Mis there, Spamalot, and La Mancha. I've done three shows there before, and it's just a great little, great theater company. So I'm excited to get back on stage after 2 years to do that.
I'm going to try to see if I can play the beginnings of this so we can talk over it. Hold on, let me see if it's going to do it. All right. Now,
there is that thing.
There it is.
There's that oboe. Yeah, and I'll tell you about how we recorded this album is called Against the Tide, and actually we recorded the whole album in New York City at Sony Studios when I was doing Phantom for those 2.5 years, and so I would go a lot of this album was a lot of this album was recorded. I would do a Phantom performance, and after the show at night at 10:30, I'd go to Sony Studios and sing till 1 o'clock in the morning and record this album. So it was recorded actually while I was doing The Phantom on Broadway, and we had such great arrangements. David Lai, who still conducts Phantom on Broadway, he produced it, and my buddy Kirkiano, who I still work with, the album's has held up. And when I listen to this, it's like not bad. It's pretty good. And this song that you're playing now, Music of the Night, was arranged by a Bill Brown, a Broadway arranger. So it's a very different, we wanted it not to be the same arrangement that the Broadway arrangement was. We wanted to do something different. So he put this together, and we had a full orchestra in Sony Studios. It was beautiful. So this arrangement is unusual, but I like it.
Is this the arrangement when you sing it now that you use?
No, I don't. I've never sung it like this before. Just that one. I mean, I have the orchestrations for that version, but I don't sing it this way since I recorded it, really. But it's just pretty. It's very.
Now be quiet so I can hear it. I'm sure that those who are listening want to hear a little bit of it.
All right.
I'm just going to play a little bit more of it, and then we'll talk.
Okay.
To the music of the night. Close your eyes and surrender to your darkest dreams. Purge your thoughts of the life you knew before. Close your eyes, let your spirit start to soar.
Wow.
Yes, I know.
It's like a different person. I don't know who that. I'm just a different lifetime ago. I mean, I listen to that and go like, who was that? And how did I do that for 6 years, eight times a week? I don't know.
All right, I'm gonna.
I couldn't do it now. Yeah. Thanks.
Well,
that was beautiful.
You know, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just. I mean, you hit that, and the sustaining of it is just absolutely. Those of us who sing really, you know, we appreciate what the voice can do, and also it's the muscles. That's how you did it. You know, your voice got.
It's
used
really
to your
crazy.
Muscles.
It got better. Yeah, it's easier. It's like a muscle.
Yeah,
if you use
it does.
It or lose it. Yeah.
You do. I really can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule and coming here and talking to me, my good friend. I love you so much.
It's like no time has passed. It's like we giggle and laugh like we always do.
I know. I mean, if people were to see it, well, we would go places and people would see it. Well, you and your husband. I said, no, my husband looks a little differently.
But see, people that don't know you, it's like when you go places with you, like you're like, you know, I don't know what you call it. You're always dressed up and like Diana Ross walking down the street. So it's like everybody looks at you. It's like, oh my God, who is that? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that we both really started a friendship decades ago, and it's still here, and I love you so very, very much.
I love you too, Lenny.
You know, I wish you everything. I wish you everything.
You too.
That you want.
And I hope to see you. I hope we can see each other at some point.
Yes, I really, really do hope that we really can see each other, you know, soon. And I'd love to see you live, and love to your family, love to your mother. You know, she's such
a beautiful, lovely
lady.
Gorgeous lady, yep. She came out this summer with my sister, and we went to a Dodger game, and it was fun, a lot of fun.
Yes, you know. I will say goodbye for now, but we're going to do our after show, after thoughts, and we're going to take a little break and do that, and next week I will
have... How does that work again? How does that work? On Zoom?
I sent you the invitation.
I'll be there.
I'll call you in a little bit because, see, I know. Never mind. I'll get you there. But I want to welcome the Austin sisters. Will be here next week. And these are, she's the younger sister, Linda, is a percussionist. The older sister is a director and choreographer and dancer. So, and I went to school with Debbie. So we'll talk about that, but I cannot wait for everyone to see you on After Show Afterthoughts. So thank you so much, my love, and I will be seeing you on the radio and in the video in about 10 minutes. Love you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Love you. Love you.
Thank you. Thank you. Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, cause they don't know how to love you far away. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you,
take this heart away, and you can take these arms, cause I'll never use them, just believe every word that I say. You give me fever.